From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
It's The Dice Men Cometh back with you for another week, and if you got that feeling that you've heard all this sort of bull before, well then maybe you're suffering from what I like to call deja vu.
What?
Because we're back again to talk about more games, tabletop games, card games, role-playing games, all sorts of games that you might like to play by yourself.
Yeah.
As is the want, or with other people.
Or cattle.
Or, no, not cattle.
Deja vu?
Yeah, it's the feeling you've heard all this bull before.
Oh, right.
All right. Okay. Anyway, so
it's onwards and upwards from here. Hey. We promise.
Let me do what we need to do, which is tell you, Mark, that today is February 16th. It is Valentine's Day, Eve, post. We don't care about love no more because it's the 16th of February. It is also episode 153, awesome. Believe it or not. And this week, Mark and Trent, you're going to talk about a solo game to get you started that you might be able to play with your significant other.
Well, it is Valentine's Day after all, so there's been plenty of solo action.
Exactly. Then I'm going to talk about an iOS game that you can play by yourself. And Mark, you'll talk about more stuff that you can do by yourself, but let's get to a song. You are with the Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3.
One of my favourite little tunes here from Pearl Jam is called Light Years. Edge Radio 99.3 FM, The Dice Men Cometh, and Pearl Jam, Light Years.
Yes, that is completely correct, Trent. Thank you very much for cutting that song so short.
Can I tell you, it's got the lyric in it, I have played games with pieces and rules. And the song, I'm a Pearl Jam nerd that was originally called Puzzle and Game. Not entirely unrelated.
Ooh, well, there you go.
To what we do here.
There you go.
That's better than Mark's opening for the show.
Which was thoroughly researched on worldsworstpuns.com.
Absolutely.
As I understand
it. I swear by them.
Anyway, let's talk about something that, Mark, you are somewhat expert in, and that is solo games.
Oh, Garth, come on.
But I hate to defer this conversation to a new convert to the solo game hobby, and that would be one Dice Man Trent.
Hello. What we've been playing lately, or what I've been playing lately, as I refer to it at the moment. Mark normally is the solo game king here. I think primarily, and look, we do mock you mercilessly for it.
Absolutely.
And it's just because it's a handy piece of ammunition with which to do that. But also, traditionally, you've been playing a lot of solo games because you've invested a lot of money in games that no one wants to play with you.
Yes, and particularly, you know, it started with the Pathfinder adventure role-playing game. It might also be because I'm single. Hello, ladies.
And I've recently borrowed the Pathfinder game off you. We might get into that a little bit later on in the show. But you reckon you've spent maybe $200-$300 on Pathfinder?
Yeah, $300 easily.
Okay, all the way down the other end of the spectrum is a little game called Onirim or Onirim. I'm not really too sure.
I think every review you watch or listen to, they pronounce it somewhat differently.
Onirim. It's about $40 worth of game. A little box. And it's part of a series only slightly down the street from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And the restaurant at the end of the universe is the Oniverse. And it's games produced by designer Shadi Torbi and published by Z-Man. They are all solo or two-player games, and they share the artwork of one Elise Plessis, perhaps.
Plessis, surely.
Perhaps. You are correct. I do not know. these started back in 2010, and there are five games in the series now. They're all in this sort of short, small box, solo space. They're quite abstract looking, I suppose, but at the same time, the art is very childlike and slightly spooky.
Yes.
You know, not necessarily in that Tim Burton way, but that same kind of space.
Well, it sort of invokes the whole dreamscape, doesn't it?
Exactly. Well, yeah, so we'll get to this. So Onirim was the first in this series. And it's got a brand new edition that's come out through Z-Man, hence we're talking about it.
And I think I should say, Trent, so Z-Man have obviously produced the English version.
Oh, right.
This is, from my research, a French game.
Yes.
Hence that Shadi Torbi and Philippe Girin and Elise Plessis are all involved. And I believe the original is by Philosophia, which is a one part of the Asmodee group now.
Of course they are. Because is there anybody left who's not part of the Asmodee group?
And I was very excited to read just recently that Asmodee announced an app version of this in their latest round of Coming Soon.
So
stealing my thunder.
But
far out.
I think the Frenchness of this game comes through, that sort of crazy, abstract, mystical, look at this, it's Renaz.
So what is Onirim anyway? It's, I suppose the elevator pitch would be that it's a kind of glorified patience.
Yeah.
But it's much more than that. That's a bit unkind.
Yes.
The deck is, because it is just a deck of cards primarily, it's a labyrinth thematically that you're looking for the doors to as you work your way through the deck. You pick up a hand of five cards from which you play symbols just in front of you in a little tableau in one of four colours. If you can match three different symbols of the same colour, then you're allowed to search through the deck for the door of that colour.
Hmm.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
All right, and there's eight different doors. If you find all eight, then you win. But, of course, it's not quite that simple.
Oh, I don't know. I found it quite simple to make.
Yes. You managed to get the whole thing out first time.
I did. And for people who are interested in what this game looks like, and let's talk about this for a moment, I have posted a little, yes, it's sideways, video on Instagram with just a quick pan around of the components, because when you first showed me this game, Trent, I was blown away by the production values. And it goes right to, you open the box and it's got the...
Looks like a cat's face, doesn't it?
Onirim character, which is, I'm guessing it's some sort of a demon, but it looks very much like a cat.
He's a character called the Little Incubus, and he's actually a component in the game who can help you out as you wander through this labyrinth.
And you've got, like, the two flaps that you open up in the box basically form the Little Incubus, and then you've got your book in there, and it's got diagonal bits, and it's got pictures, and you're just opening it up, and it looks amazing.
And this is part of what drew me in at the start, and certainly part of what drew my daughter in, because she just loves playing this game with Dad, and that's not something that we can always say with many of the games I try to bring to the table. So, look, get three symbols in a row that are different, search through the deck to find the eight doors. A couple of little tricks in that, little wrinkles in the rules. You can't play the same symbol twice in a row, and some symbols are more common than others, so that can make it challenging. Mm. And scattered through the deck are 10 nightmare cards. Because you're a dreamer wandering through this dream labyrinth looking for the doors, the nightmare cards pop up. They make you burn through five cards to escape, thereby shrinking the labyrinth deck and making it harder and harder to actually dig through and find the symbols that you need to unlock the doors.
And presumably make more nightmares come out or be more readily available in the deck?
Well, there's 10 of them scattered through the deck.
Yeah.
Okay. And you can either throw out your hand and redraw or just burn five off the top of the deck.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
Or the thing that really hurts, although I did it today, was you can give up one of the doors you've found to avoid either of those other things. But, of course, that is quite a cost.
And this is where the Little Incubus can help you, because it's basically a marker for... look, I won't go into the exact rule now, but you can basically use it to activate a nightmare in advance. So when the card comes up in the deck, you can just deal with it quickly.
Gotcha.
And then there's some other special key cards that can help scatter through the deck, but timing's everything with those. You can play solo, or you can play with two people, basically sort of sharing a hand as a co-op. You'll have three cards each, and then you'll share two in the middle, which are sort of shared property, and that becomes part of your hand.
Okay.
And you just work as a co-op, and you know, you can't swap cards between each other, but you just work together. So far, so simple, okay? And it's so simple, even Mark was able to master it pretty quickly and apparently get it out in his first time today.
It's a shame he couldn't record video the right way.
Hey, phones are portable, and one of the ways you can port them
is sideways, Garth. Okay?
It's a shame not everybody has their home PC.
Exactly. Or an iPhone. Way. iPhone's really easy, won't it?
The game also comes with seven... This new edition comes with seven modular expansions already in the box. And I looked at that and went, yeah, it comes with seven expansions in the box. Give me a break.
Yeah.
But they are just little modules you can sort of turn on or off just by shuffling the cards into the deck effectively. They usually sort of add something that helps and something that hinders within the same component. So, for example, there's some that give you extra doors to find, which makes it a little bit harder. There's more to do, but then they also come with new kinds of symbols that give you extra powers to search through the deck. There are dead end cards, which I love.
Yeah, I played with them today.
Yeah, because they get stuck in your hand and you can't discard them, right? So they just clog the whole thing up.
Yep.
And effectively, the only way to get rid of them is to run into a nightmare
and get rid of them.
Throw out your whole hand. Yeah. Exactly. There's challenges to find the doors in a particular order. There's these towers that I haven't even played with yet.
Yeah, I had a good look at some of the expansions today. I only played with a couple, but I did really like the fact that you can basically have it be just a very minor change to the game, right up to you've got these actual puzzles where you've got to get cards out in a particular order, you've got to get other cards, and like it, the ability to change it is really quite wide with just these seven expansions. Apparently, I think a couple of them came in the original first edition,
right,
but most of them are new. And, I mean, how many times do you play a game for a while and think, oh, I hope they come out with an expansion to change it up? This comes in the box that way.
Yep. So I think when my daughter and I, Pearl, started playing, we immediately switched on, say, two or three of the expansions, and then she was like, that's enough.
Yeah.
Because it very quickly becomes a lot more challenging.
Yeah.
Your options of whether or not simply to draw a card or discard or what have you start multiplying, and you've got to have a lot more consideration. So we managed to add enough to pitch it at the right difficulty level, I think, for her and I, because she's smarter than me in many, many ways, where it was just challenging enough for us. We've been able to get it to solve the puzzle, find all the doors twice now, but most of the time it still kicks our butt. It really does come all the way down to the end of the deck.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that the interesting thing about this on the BGG is that it actually says the age is 14 plus. Now, that's what the game itself recommends, but the community, you know, good old BGG as it does, agrees with you because it's saying that the age is actually 8 or plus. You know, it's pretty simple, and I dare say a vast majority of players are in the same situation as you, where you're playing it with one adult player and one child player because it seems to fit that bill really nicely.
Yeah, to me it's pitched perfectly at that level.
It's like the nightmare theme, maybe.
That would maybe push... Maybe they wanted to pitch it as a scary game, but it's not.
At all.
More, you know, dreams, nightmares, that sort of etheric type stuff.
Yeah, and look, having not played this, the other thing I do like immediately, being the tight ass that I am, is that it comes in expansion. That's fantastic.
What's the designer's name again? How did you pronounce it?
It is Shadi Torbe.
He's a professional opera singer.
Wow.
Right, for reals. Like, he's on YouTube. I mean, he sounds all right. As far as what I know, what do I know about opera? I don't know anything. But he sort of brings to this, and as I say, it's part of a series. Onirim.
Mortillion.
Yes.
Castellion.
Sylvian.
Yeah, and Urbion.
I've already bought Sylvian. Again, Pearl just said, I want to play more of these.
Yeah.
Sylvian's got a theme where you're protecting a forest that's burning. Completely different mechanic. Same artist, but it's this same sort of, it's like a quite pure sort of childlike vision that Shadi sort of brings to this.
Shadi, I call him Shadi.
Slim Shadi.
Yeah. Stand up, mate.
These are the games that he wanted to play or did play when he was a kid.
Huh.
And he sort of brings that, and his intention...
He's had a tormented childhood.
Perhaps, just been forced to practice opera the whole time.
Yeah.
He's trying to modernise the solo game by creating opportunities for meaningful decisions.
Mm.
So when I say it's glorified patience, yes, you are just shuffling cards and pulling cards off a deck, but you have to make choices based on that, and it's not just black five chance. on red six, and you're you've got to deal with the randomness. I think so. I'd say yes, it's patience, but it's patience with a brain and a very sweet, slightly spooky heart.
Yeah, and look, there were a couple of things that I didn't like, I must admit. Like, so
when you get
your three colours in, you have to get the door. You have to dive into the deck and pull out the door. And so you're diving in, you're pulling out the doors, you're putting them back in. The doors are only in the deck because on the very, very slight off chance, and it's never happened to me when I played it with you or by myself, that you draw a door and you happen to have the right key, you can get it immediately.
Yeah.
Now, to me, that chance is so slim that you can, you don't really need the doors in the deck, and I just found it a bit annoying.
Oh, yeah, look, that's fair. And a little kid, because it's a big deck of cards,
yeah,
a little kid can find it hard to shuffle.
And, yeah.
Garth, you complained that Mark was stealing your thunder talking about electronic gaming.
I did,
Well, let's talk electronic gaming and get some kind of iOS or e-gaming.
Yeah.
Do people still call it that, the kids?
Esports.
Sure we do.
Let's talk about that next. It's the Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
That was Gooch Palms with Tiny Insight here with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, speaking of someone with...
FM.
Speaking of someone...
99.3 FM.
99.3 FM.
FM. He always says 99.3 as well. Like,
yeah, well, he started and now he's got me
doing
it. Well,
it's 99.3 FM.
Yeah.
Just, like, what's 99.3? What?
Gigahertz. Well, there is no 99.3 on AM.
Anyway, speaking of someone with some tiny insights, Garth, you're going to give us a tiny insight into some online games?
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about an app that has been around for a while. However, it's been sitting on my phone, not getting much use, I must admit. However, Mark, you have been getting a little bit of use of this particular app.
Yep.
And this app is available through the iTunes Store, which is quite good. And it is a massive behemoth of an app, potentially.
Yes.
We are talking about Pathfinder Adventures. That has its own app,
okay.
Mark tells me. But Pathfinder Adventures by Paizo is an enormous app that you might get the opportunity to play some of, unless you're willing to fork out about $40 or $50 or a little bit more than that.
Is the app at least as big as the Pathfinder Adventure card game box?
Well, the funny thing is, the actual app itself, and I'm looking at it right now, is only apparently 730 megabytes
no
when you
way.
Download.
No way. It takes forever to update.
However, pretty consistently, every week or so, it'll have an update that is at least that size again, or possibly 1.2 gigabytes, like it just was not so long ago.
Yep. And that's one of my biggest complaints about this is, you know, for an app on your phone, and let's face it, a lot of people out there have your standard iPhone, not counting 7, but, you know, 6 and back, with, say, 16 gigabytes of memory. You put this game on, which is going to have over a gigabyte in this one app. You don't really have 16 gig on an iPhone because 3 gigs taken up by the bloatware that is iOS. So you're talking about this one app taking up maybe, you know, a fifth or an eighth of your memory. That's one thing.
So just in case anyone doesn't know, Pathfinder is, of course, this massive role-playing property. It was turned into a card game a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Mark financed it solely.
Yes, and we now have the electronic version.
Correct.
Which is the latest in a whole bunch of card games, you know, from Magic to...
Yes.
Yeah, to make the port Hero over, and I've talked about them now for years and years and years, and I love the fact that I get to do that because it is great to be able to have this mobile technology where you can play a board game when you're on the bus or when you're sitting in the doctor's office or when you've got 5 minutes to kill or when you are on your respective toilet in your own home. It's great. It's wonderful.
And now I've been playing this on my iPad.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I've been able to lend Trent the card game version because I'm pretty sure I'm never going to play the physical version again, unless it's with some of my friends maybe wanted to play a multiplayer version.
Because we tried that before.
What are the chances?
Playing solo.
Yeah, we did try that once, and it was a game of Mark telling us what to do.
So does
How
it
is
look,
that different from any other game we play, Garth?
Well, you raise a good point.
Yeah.
Does it look the same, though, with that sort of wagon wheel layout of card decks?
No.
No, so look, it goes for the very cinematic look, and it's got a lot of cutscenes and a bit of story to get the flavour text through. And that is all wonderful and something that you would expect from an app of this quality. Now, the great thing is the app is free, theoretically. But of course, it then very quickly goes down the path of all those in-app purchases where you can spend up to $38.99 to secure the, is it the Rise of the Rune Lords?
The five extra adventure packs, yeah, for a total of six.
Exactly. Now, it does give you the opportunity to get those.
Let me tell you, that's dirt cheap compared to what you pay for.
Well, I hear it's about 10% of what you would pay otherwise. So, look, it does do that. And look, it does... well, look, let me go back a little bit before we worry about those little details. The good thing is about this app, it is very easy to use in terms of the interface. It guides you through a... basically a tutorial that is the quest, and you start with only two heroes that you're going to be playing with, and that sees you through for quite a long time, actually, because you are virtually stuck at this little bit of time where, unless you want to spend money, you've got to do quest after quest after quest to earn that delicious gold.
Well, the good thing, though, is that the first adventure pack, because when the physical game came out, it had the base game and the first adventure pack in the box as you bought it. So this came out, when the app came out, I think the normal charge for an adventure deck is 8,000 gold. The first adventure deck, however, is only 2,000 gold.
At the moment, it's even less, Mark. It's 500
gold. Oh, there you go, yeah.
They have sales. Wow.
They do.
Yeah, yeah. But then, you know, contrast with that, they've just bought out a pack where you get a new version of one or more heroes, some coloured dice, for goodness sake, because it matters what colour the electronic dice are that you're rolling, and some bonus cards.
It's pretty soon going to come out with an electronic playmat, isn't it, Mark?
And, for example, like that thing with extra characters, coloured dice and some extra cards, they're charging, again, like $30-odd dollars. I don't know why anyone would ever pay for that. And I'll say
I love the irony that Mark's the one saying, I don't know why anyone would pay that.
Yeah.
No, that just sounds crazy. No, but, you must have rocks in your head.
I don't think... I may have paid for one adventure deck. I've now finished the fourth one. All the rest I've done with gold, where I've got through playing the game. They have, like, daily challenges, so you might need to use 10 allies or win two on legendary difficulty or something, and you get bonus gold, as well as the gold you get for completing the story. So I've managed to get the vast majority of it out without paying anything.
Is it the same cards online as it is in the physical set?
Yes, and more. So there are, like, bonus cards, because they've tried to introduce, a la collectible card game, your base level cards, and then you've got, I can't think what the terminology is, but less popular cards or less common cards and then rare cards. You can buy these treasure chests that are guaranteed to come with one rare card.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing you can spend your gold and or money on, because, of course, you can spend real money to buy gold so you can buy more stuff. There is a big, big part of this that's the in-app purchase.
Of course it is.
But I have really focused on, because I've spent enough money in this universe,
and you have enough spare time,
I'm not spending any more on unlocking all this stuff with gold, and you can do it quite a bit.
Yeah, so what I like about it is that it plays very quickly, you know. So this game... Now, Trent, you experienced this not too long ago where Mark was kind enough to give you his copy.
Mm.
You then spent 2 hours disassembling the decks that he had created to get yourself to stage one, position one, scenario one, to be able to then possibly play the game.
Yeah, look, I can't say that that wasn't unpleasant, though. There's a certain nerdy...
there's a bit of serenity to that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, all good nerds like to just... sort stuff out.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, just file stuff into the right categories.
What I like about this is that you can basically hit the ground running, go straight into it. And what I've been doing quite lately is we've spent a bit of time with the parents-in-law lately because some family have been down. I've been sitting in my father-in-law's massage chair getting a massage while I play Pathfinder. Ooh. It's been very relaxing.
That's what I wanted to ask. When do you guys have time to play this, to play this stuff?
Well, the massage setting is 15 minutes, so I get 15 minutes of uninterrupted time. And that is about the time it takes to play this scenario and on Pathfinder.
That is one of the good things about the app is you could literally have one turn, put your iPad away and pull it out again tomorrow. Like, you don't have to play through the entire scenario in one hit. So I'll often start one when I might have it on the bench while I'm cooking dinner, or after, like, my son's gone to bed and I'm thinking, oh, will I watch TV? Will I do this? I might play it for 10 or 15 minutes. So, like, you can do it like that.
This actually sounds quite attractive because at the moment, like many people, I'm sort of experiencing this strange sensation where I get up every morning and if Donald Trump hasn't done something outrageous, I sort of feel like my day hasn't started. Right? You know, like I'm just so looking forward to jumping onto the phone to look at the news for that sense of being outraged.
Yeah.
This probably sounds like something else I should be occupying my time with.
Exactly right. But what this got me thinking about, because I have lost a couple of hours now, not too, you know, in the last week or so playing this game, and I've really, really enjoyed it, but I'm now stuck where I'm doing a few missions to get that little bit of gold, and that gets a bit annoying.
Yeah, you do get that sort of grindy feel if you've ever played your World of Warcraft type thing where you've got to grind away for a few days to get enough gold to then get something you really want or some new level or whatever.
Exactly. But what that has led me down the path of is then switching on to spending a bit more time doing online board gaming. So this is where I have gone back into a few different websites to get that fix that way, rather than playing the solo version of an app, going in and trying to play against real people. So that's where I wanted to talk about this, because very recently, in fact last night, we had a Dice Man first in that all four of us were round a table playing a game, but we were all in our own homes. Mm. Wasn't that exciting,
boys? You had to drag me to this kicking and screaming. I've been very resistant to this.
Yes, you have been, and we'll get to the game and the website probably last. We'll start with a couple of other ones, just because everyone has had a bit of a dipping their toe into it, and really I just wanted to have a quick chat about the differences and what you guys like about these websites, if anything at all, and what you don't like, because there is a lot of competition out there these days for, A, our board gaming physical games. Buy them online, buy them in a shop, go and play them at a mate's place, go to a board game cafe, whatever the case may be. It's also very, very easy to download an app for a lot of games these days, so you don't actually have to spend any money or very much money at all. But what's also very expensive these days is our time. And, you know, we play games a couple of nights a week, which we feel is a lot of an investment out of our time. Yeah. It's nothing compared to a few people, but it's a lot of time we dedicate.
What's also expensive are the bloody board games that we buy.
Yes.
Especially in this part of the world. And, you know, $5 to download an app, sure. Or for free, jump on one of these board game online websites, register, get yourself a free account. There might be some limitations with that.
Of course there is.
The amount of games that you can play or what have you. But it's all there. You've got a whole library of stuff that you can start playing straight away.
Completely.
And so, a lot of it's brand new.
Indeed. So let's start with the exact opposite of that and go old school.
Oh, yes.
With Mark's favourite website, yukata.de.
Yeah, and look, I must admit, in recent times, it's not my favourite because it's been around a long time. It is a bit clunky, but it was the first one I discovered for this sort of turn-based gaming where they had, you know, Euro-type games. You know, I mean, you're talking Carcassonne, you're talking Vikings, you're talking the Castles of Burgundy, and there's probably on there, there's probably, 100 games maybe, some of them more well-known than others. As I said, clunky interface, but still great. And a lot of what takes you to one of these sites or the other, Garth, I think, is the games that are available.
Of course.
Now, more and more there's an overlap, but that's what got me started on Yukata. So, because it was the first and it was the one that I discovered. Must admit, I'm not playing very much there lately.
No, so that's the thing is, the first thing I found is it's a bloody hard website to find, because how do you spell Yukata? Seriously. I remember, is it Yukata as an online encyclopedia from the 1980s?
No, that's Encarta.
Encarta, see? So that's where I got stuck. I didn't know whether it was U-K-A-R-T-A or Y-U-K-A-R.
It comes from an old Euro game and like Yucatan.
Yeah, so too young for that.
And it's an ugly website.
It is, and it's certainly not the one where I would ever suggest someone who's wanting to get into this starts with. So let's go a little bit more modern. And something that we've probably spent a fair amount of time with lately, but certainly not the most, and that would be Boitajou.
Oui.
Which is a French-based website, which oui. has, again, a lot of the same types of games yeah. that Yukata has. The user interface is certainly a little bit more intuitive.
Yeah.
I still find, though, that the main stumbling block is starting a game and yeah. trying to get your friends or your mates into it, because it's one thing to go on this site and just start completely afresh with no friends, no anyone on this. But a lot of the time, and this is what we do, is we play games with each other on these ones. But starting a game on Boitajou can just be a bloody nightmare.
Yeah, yeah. And look, I mean, all these sites have, rules availability. So you can go and read the rules. But a lot of the time, I think, depending on the complexity of the game, it's not ideal to sort of teach yourself how to play. Although the great thing is with a lot of them, they do say beginner game or whatever, so at least people aren't going to yell at you for taking a long time to take it.
Exactly right. So that's a pretty good middle ground. And again, it's got some really good games on there, as long as you know how to play them.
Yeah.
So then we go on to the one that we've spent arguably the most amount of time on over the last 6 or 12 months, and that would be Board Game Arena.
Yep.
Board Game Arena is one of the newer ones into this little fold, and it's got some fantastic games. It did advertise itself as being the website that had the most board yeah. games out there of any other site. Don't know whether I can claim that now. We'll get to that in a moment.
The interesting thing I noted, though, is pretty much any time I log on, there will be over 1,000 people on there at any one time playing games. That's a lot. Whereas if I look at Yukata, there's probably 50 people logged in on there.
I've even been on Board Game Arena. So I went on, I played Eruption on there.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And it's fun. And he's also the reason that we've had to have a lot of games cancelled, because never confirmed his place at the table. But anyway, look, I find that a really good option. It is also very easy, and that's what I like about Board Game Arena, to find the rules and to watch a video and just get a bit more understanding about a game if you're very new to it.
Yeah.
But let's go to the newest one on there that we've certainly been involved with, and that's Tabletopia.
Yeah.
They had a very, very successful Kickstarter not too long ago, which was all about funding this website, which is going to allow you to play online board games in 3D space on the website. But it's not the rules system that you're paying for. It's basically the beautiful 3D image of a board
game. That's a virtual tabletop.
Yeah, exactly right, where you don't have the confines of the rule set in that I can only move my piece from there to there. It is, you can pick up and do whatever the hell you want with every part of the screen and the board and what have you, because it's just the engine. Now,
and I find that really frustrating.
Yes.
Being used to these systems where the systems impose the rules and you can't do something that you can't do. Whereas in Tabletopia, it's like, if I make a mistake and I don't realise it and you don't realise it, the game's going to allow that.
Yeah, well, we were playing Santorini last night and we just started mucking around. Yeah. It's like, oh, you can flick pieces off the board and just sit them over there in the corner. And then suddenly Leon's pulled out every single piece in the game and just dumped them all on top of the board at once. And it's like there's, and the physics engine is just working overtime to have all these pieces falling. I was crying.
And isn't that brilliant? Because you can't have that flip-the-table opportunity when you're sitting around the table, but in here you can.
Vital Lacerda was talking about Tabletopia a couple of weeks ago on the show because he now uses that or intends to use that exclusively for playtesting. His games, and certainly that's what he did with Lisboa.
Exactly right.
Like, in terms of costs, like, you can virtually send your game all around the world and have so many different groups playing and giving you feedback for virtually no cost at all.
I did find it a bit clunky.
Well, look,
by the time I installed the driver and the thing, and then
my mouse
wasn't working.
It's about that one-off initial figuring the hell what it all does. So yes, you've got to download the certain engine, and yes, you've got to open it in the right browser, and that's just part of the deal. But once you've done it once, and more importantly, once you've figured out what controls you have to use, it actually works pretty smoothly, and I think you will find in our game of Santorini, Mark, that we've had with Leon last night, that went pretty quick.
Yeah, well, look, let's come back and talk a little bit more about this, because this leads into the conversation that I want to have about board games, online and physical, and video games and that sort of dilemma. So we'll be back shortly.
Casey Hill and Foreign Fields on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. This is the nerdy tabletop gaming show, The Dice Men Cometh. Last week, you guys were talking about a couple of Australian Kickstarters. I thought it worth just updating peeps. Kingdom of Air, Kingmaker, which we've played. What a fantastic little game this is, like a cross between Love Letter and Coup. And it's just, it's at the time of broadcast, it's got 7 days to go on Kickstarter. It's just shy of funding. I can't see any reason why this game isn't a bigger hit, because it's a fantastic little card game and it deserves your support. And it's for cheap as
It's $25 including shipping.
Exactly right. And everyone should check the latest update by Kingdom of Air as well, because it does feature our talk about it last week.
And we're not getting paid for that or anything.
No, we like are not.
Rain Diplomacy, Deception and Domination, whatever it's called, that managed to fund.
Yeah, got over the line.
Australian Kickstarter.
Nice work by Garage Games.
Congratulations,
I have a copy
guys.
Ready for us to play when I read the rules.
Coming to us out of Wollongong. And giant miniatures in the form of a MOBA-inspired game called Judgment. Again, not quite funded. 8 days to go at the time of broadcast. Again, I just can't understand why this hasn't funded. Giant miniatures.
Double the size of normal miniatures.
Not a contradiction in terms. I mean, for the bloody giant mini of the Minotaur that they've got in there alone.
Isn't it fantastic?
You would think that this would be funding. So let's get yourself onto Kickstarter and support the Australian board gaming hobby. But right now we're talking online gaming and Tabletopia, which, Garth, I've got to thank you for introducing us to. I had a lot of fun with it last night.
Oh, you did, did you?
I did.
Because you know when you have someone and they just don't want to do what they need to do and they don't want to listen and they don't want to be shown and, you know, they think they know better and they say, oh, I don't have time for that and I'm too busy going to sleep and all those kind of things. And then finally, because you say, look, we run a podcast and radio show and we should talk about this, they go, all right, I'll do it then. So that's the experience that I had teaching Trent how to access and then log into not only Tabletopia, but Tabletopia and Discord so that we can talk about it while we were actually playing this game. How was your experience, Trent?
I don't... Look, in all seriousness, I don't know what it is. I've got some kind of mental...
issue. Yeah, we know.
Block that prevents me from... I just don't get excited about playing board games online. For me, it's always been about the tactile experience and the socialization. So I don't know what to tell you. There isn't anything more mysterious in it than that.
So the thing is, though, which I find quite curious, Mark, is one, Trent just borrowed your Pathfinder for the sole purpose of playing a solo game.
Yes.
And two, as soon as we'd finished playing a game of Santorini last night on Tabletopia, and Santorini, it must be said, is one of the hottest games out there right now, that you probably have a lot of trouble getting, except if you get it online. Trent deliberately went out of his way at the end of it to say, that was fun, we should do this again sometime. In exactly that voice.
In a text message.
Yeah. To me, what added to it, though, and why the Tabletopia experience could be so different to, like, a board game arena is that we had logged into, what were we using, Discord?
Yeah.
So we had, talk about nerdy, we had our headsets on and we were trash talking around the table just like we normally do in person from the leisure of our own homes.
I don't find it satisfying, as satisfying.
Yeah.
Right? Because, look, I'm a Mac user and I don't know if it was the Safari browser or my...
It was your mouse.
Magic mouse thing.
That's exactly
I was not finding the engagement with the 3D.
Yeah, it's not intuitive until you give it a go and just pretend. And look,
gave it a go and I enjoyed it. I'm like, I'm serious. I did, right? And I might do it again sometime. But it's kind of, and it's almost like, I guess I want to compare it to just video gaming in general. I got a PS4 sitting at home that I don't use.
Yes.
Right? I've got The Witcher 3. I know. Okay. And The Witcher 3 is like 800 million hours of gameplay. I suck at video games. I suck at video games harder than I suck at board games. And it's sitting there like a great big lump of my future that I don't want to commit to.
Exactly. Well, this leads me totally into where I'm going, because I have a problem.
Yes, shall we? Where do we start?
Yeah, don't make a list. One of them is I tend to get addicted to video games. My latest addiction is Elder Scrolls Online, also known as One Tamriel, which is basically a combination of World of Warcraft with the online gaming and Skyrim with the world of the Elder Scrolls.
Is this new after Skyrim?
Yes, so this came out after Skyrim, although it's been out now, I think, a couple of years, but just recently they basically made it free to play.
So that's why you became addicted to it.
So before it was a subscription model where you had to pay your monthly subscription. Now you can pay for free, but obviously you get extra things if you're a paid-up subscriber. So I'm playing the free version.
Massive open world wandering around.
Yeah, and it's the world of the Elder Scrolls.
The open world frightens me.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I loved about Skyrim.
It's too much to do.
Because you could just wander off in any direction.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Real world's scary enough. That's open enough.
It takes so much time and you know, it'll be, I'll just sit down for half an hour. There's this one quest I want to knock off.
No.
And then 3 or 4 hours later, I'm going, oh, I should go to bed, but it's probably almost time to get up and... You know, and then the next thing, I'm trashed for the day. And I found myself thinking, why is it that I'll sit down and do this for 3 or 4 hours, although I never intend to do it for 3 or 4 hours, whereas the thing that turned me off the Pathfinder playing the real game was I know it's going to take me half an hour to shuffle up all the location decks and set them up. Then it's probably going to take me over an hour to play, and then it's probably going to take me... I'll usually spend half an hour getting the next thing ready so that I don't have to spend the half an hour again setting it up. And in the end, I go, oh, no, it's too much trouble. Or even now with Arkham Horror, where I've still got the first big expansion, the Dunwich expansion, is still in shrink. And I've played through the three base expansions. But I should really be playing that because it's such a great game.
I think we can conclusively here and now say that Arkham Horror LCG is a much, much better game than the Pathfinder adventure card game. I mean, they're very different.
Yeah.
Pathfinder's really fiddly. Arkham's so streamlined.
Yes.
That's absolutely something you should be investing in.
But even so, it's just like that. You know, maybe part of it is the dilemma that I know that you guys are going to give me a hard time for playing solo games. I'm psychologically fragile, Trent.
Trent is not allowed to anymore. That's the problem.
You know, there's a stigma associated with you're the one that plays games by yourself, you loser. Whereas we're all losers out there playing video games by ourselves. And when I play these, like, open world type games, I'm not a World of Warcraft with my headset and talking to people. I'm not even in a guild or anything like that. I'm just tooling around doing my own solo thing at my own pace. Now, what I realise is if I want to really get into it, I'm going to have to get with other people because it just gets too difficult to do it by yourself. But there's so many things, so many quests, so many things you can interact with that you don't even need to do that. And, yeah, I just found myself thinking, why am I willing to do that on one hand where this other thing, you know, there's a stigma associated with it. It's probably a similar amount of time or even less, but one I'll easily slide into and one I won't. And is it just that I'm lazy?
So in Elder Scrolls, are there other people online wandering
Zillions.
Around at the same time?
Zillions.
And they're all going to be 12-year-old kids from Korea who are going to know everything about the game,
probably
backwards and forwards. And you know, because,
and they've all spent loads of cash and they look amazing and they've got all the stuff.
Drives me crazy. Had the same experience with playing in Netrunner in-store games.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Got my ass kicked by teenagers, right, who just, it's their life.
Yeah.
I know, or their brains are more of a, you know, because we're all on the long, slow path into cognitive decline. At this point, right? And these are, you know, players who are still sharp and young and fast.
Well, the other thing about the online thing is, and I had this happen with when I dabbled with World of Warcraft, I'd be chatting to some person and be like, yeah, come back tomorrow and we'll go and do some other things together. And, you know, at the time we were the same level, I'll come back tomorrow, I'll still be the same level I was. And the dude I was with last night, because they've been playing for the last 20 hours, they're now 10 levels above.
But don't you have a job or a family? Oh, no, you don't.
Right. No, because it's school holidays. But anyway, I have a feeling, Mark, that this has a lot to do with what your passions are about board gaming, and you love the art and you love the story, and both of those things are so easily accessible in that video game space. Yeah. In that the games you play, they're generally the open world and very beautiful. And because you're such a fan of the story-driven mechanics, is that you get to be a part of that without you having to sit there and shuffle decks all by yourself.
And it is, you know, like one quest finishes, but then, of course, they say, that's so great that you saved that town, but now the queen wants you to... And, you know, the story just continues to unravel and just goes forever.
And I think the appeal of the solo game might be that it's a little bit of space and, I mean, I'm going to call it quiet time.
Yeah.
But quiet time's a complete misnomer in my case because I'll put some blazing metal album on in the background that I'm normally not allowed to listen to and I can just sit there listening to my music, playing the cards by myself, keeping myself occupied.
Yeah, whereas I'll turn my music right down so I can hear the atmospheric noises or I can hear a monster, you know, sneaking up behind me by the ksh, ksh, ksh of its footprints or a whoosh as an arrow flies past my head, so I won't have... I'll have it very quiet.
And this gets me to my point that I think the main reason that you like these video games is because when you play solo, you very openly cheat. And that you say, oh, no. I should have played that extra card. So now I'm rolling an extra die. So, oh, no, I didn't actually mean to play that.
No, no.
I'll do it again.
I don't do that very often, Garth. One or two times.
I think there's the Rickard's rule, isn't there?
No.
Look, no one saw it. It didn't happen.
At the, in the final scenario of Arkham Horror, I got my butt kicked and I took it. And I'm going to have to start again with another character now because I got killed.
All right, we should finish this conversation, hey?
More video games for Mark, more Pathfinder and solo games. I've tried it once, and again, like the game kicked my ass totally at the very beginning. It's not easy. It's not an easy game.
It's not an intuitive system, that's for sure.
All right, more of this kind of inane, just prattle.
Banter.
Thank you. Next week on the Dice Men Cometh Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Thanks for listening. Catch us on online on the Facebooks.
Yeah, Instagram. Check out our Instagram.
Like how many followers now on Instagram?
Oh, we're very so close to 1,200.
Check out the little Oni Rim video that I posted sideways today and all our other photos. And we will catch you all next week.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.